This is Judaism Unbound, episode 51, Being Jewish in the Era of Trump. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofus.
And we're here for the third of our three-part series on the beginning of the Trump administration and the impact of that on the Jewish present and future. We're just here today by ourselves talking about our last two interviews with Shai Held and Jason Kimmelman Block. But before we jump into it, as we often do when it's just one of our discussion episodes, we like to remind our listeners that there are really two important ways that you can help us if you're enjoying this show. Number one is to go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and maybe even a review. That helps other people find the podcast. And the other thing that you could do is to make a small donation to support our work. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're actually going to get into that discussion a little bit later, as we did last week with Jason Kimmelman Block about the differences between a 501c3 and a 501c4. But we're a 501c3, which means that your donations are tax deductible. So you can make those donations at www.judaismunbound.com/donate. And you can either make a recurring monthly donation or a one-time donation. We're thrilled either way. Thank you so much for considering it. And we'll just jump right into our conversation now. So Lex, when we look at the last two interviews that we've had, and also just thinking about the news, I mean, honestly, I turn on the news every day and it's like a new train wreck every day. It's just an astonishing way to live
yes,
in the world.
Indeed.
We're actually recording this episode, you know, a few days before it actually airs. And it's just crazy in that I have no idea what is going to happen in the next few days. And it makes me nervous about doing an episode about the Trump administration, because it could very well be that everything we're talking about is either completely irrelevant because so many other things have happened in the next few days, or it is even worse than we're talking about on the show. So, you know, and that I end up listening to it and feel like we weren't freaked out enough. But yeah. Nevertheless, we have to soldier on. So it feels to me like what we're experiencing raises the question in a profound way of why be Jewish? Because, again, for me, and I think for many people that I encounter on a regular basis who are just totally freaked out about what's going on in our country, their fundamental sense is that if Judaism cannot speak loudly against this, then it would seem that Judaism doesn't have much value to my life, right? Meaning people are saying, I'm not that interested in being Jewish just because it's a tribal familial affiliation. I'm not that interested in being Jewish if it's just about a cultural heritage that we have inherited. I value those things, but if ultimately this is not a source of values that states it's not possible that the way that Donald Trump conducted himself during the race, the way that he's conducted himself in the beginning of his presidency, the way in which he's treating various vulnerable populations, these are simply across the line. And if they're not across the line, then Judaism must just not be that powerful of a moral force. And if it's not that powerful of a moral force, it's not going to be a big part of my life, certainly not for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I think that there are a ton of people feeling that way. And so I want to think through that a little more. Maybe it's a subtle distinction, but I think I approach it very slightly differently, which is that I don't know in the end whether I'm able to say or comfortable saying that Judaism stands for particular values, like as a whole. What I am comfortable saying, and what I feel I must be able to say in order for Judaism to have any purpose for the reasons you just outlined, is that Judaism provides frameworks and memories and rituals, etc., teachings that I can and do latch on to, without which I would be less able to function in difficult moments like this, when tragedy strikes and we are facing a society that is in desperate need of healing and, to use a Jewish term, tikkun, repairing. My instinct in this time is to approach this from a Jewish lens. When you know, refugees are barred from this country, my instinct is to think about, oh my gosh, I am part of a people that knows what that's like in recent memory, in the last 100 years, and that has a really long, time-honored tradition of reflecting on what that means to be strangers, to be refugees, for thousands of years.
I just want to start by at least laying out there what, for me, is really, I think, nagging at me Jewishly about Donald Trump and what's been going on. And I wonder if this is also what's nagging at other people Jewishly. But for me, it kind of falls into four categories. Maybe there are actually three categories. You know, one, the first one that I'll talk about is political stands that seem to be at odds with Judaism's historic values and the values of most American Jews, right? It seems that most American Jews voted against Trump. It seems that most American Jews continue to be strongly against Trump now that he is president. And I think that that flows in large part from a set of Jewish values that people have internalized. And, you know, those values, for example, the whole question about immigrants falls into that. And it may be, look, I mean, Jews for much of American history have voted majority Democratic, and they continue to do so in the last election. But I think it's valuable to think about, for example, the policies on immigration, that, you know, all Jews in America are descended from immigrants. Most Jews in America, the vast majority, are descended from people who immigrated to America, let's say, in the last 150 years. And so there's a strong sense in the Jewish community that we can't say immigration is a bad thing. Now, any country tends to be against illegal immigration. You have laws, right? And because you want to manage immigration. And so that's not necessarily a partisan issue, right? And you can definitely quibble, and as the parties have, about sort of how much immigration we should have, how to manage it, etc. So there is a Democrat-Republican divide on immigration, but it seems to me that the difference between that natural divide and what's going on with Donald Trump is the way in which these immigrants, these undocumented immigrants and immigrants in general, are sort of seen and talked about by Donald Trump and seemingly now by a lot of other people, including politicians who follow him, which is a very hostile, right, you know, the characterization of Mexican undocumented immigrants as rapists and criminals, and this idea that the administration is now going to create some kind of weekly update on crimes committed by undocumented immigrants, you know, that this idea of scapegoating a particular group is really something that I think crosses the line into out of a normal policy disagreement and into a place where I would say, and I think that the vast majority of Jews on a deep level agree with this, that if Judaism stands for one thing, right, it stands for the idea in terms of our textual tradition that you are strangers in a strange land, and therefore you should treat the strangers with love and kindly. And we, you know, how many times have I heard from Jews this sort of condemnation of America during the Roosevelt administration that it didn't accept Jewish immigrants during the Holocaust, and therefore many of them were killed in the Holocaust, right? And the implication is that America should have opened its doors to Jewish immigrants in the 40s, in the 30s and 40s, and it didn't, and that's a stain on America. And yet, what Trump is basically saying is that America shouldn't be open to other immigrants today who are imperiled.
Yeah, I mean, so I think you bring up some important points. I also want to bring to light, I think, two different approaches that we saw in the last two episodes, because Shai Held very much echoed the idea that you just brought, which is that this really is about a unique new set of circumstances and a unique kind of ideology that Donald Trump and his administration bring that is spectacularly dangerous in ways that we really need to fully wrestle with and comprehend. And then we also had, And I, to be totally honest, share this, and I think it's part of a healthy difference of approach that Shai Held and Jason Kim on Blackshirt, and that you and I, Dan, might have, which is that I would argue that to take the immigration situation, for example, we've had people for decades talking about the illegals and referring to human beings as illegal people. And that has been the framing, not just of Trumpists, but that has been the framing of the Republican Party. And I think we do need to wrestle in every era, but especially in this era, with the extent to which some of these developments really are Trump developments, the Orwellian craziness of saying that a certain number of people showed up at a rally that is like patently and obviously false. That's new for sure. That is a Trump thing. That is not a Republican thing. We've even had people like Lindsey Graham in the Republican world very strongly condemn that. And then there are things that I believe are basic moral principles that for me, I don't see as quite as new. And I think that that differentiation is important so that we can take on both of them.
There's two questions, right? One is can Judaism tolerate Trump? And then the question number two is, even if it can, practically, if most Jews aren't interested in that kind of Judaism, they're not going to participate in your organization. And I'm suggesting that step one is that I want to make the assertion that Judaism actually cannot tolerate Trump. For me, there's sort of like four aspects to it. I think that certain policies have been extremified by this administration, specifically, for example, about immigration. I think you could have a Jewish debate about healthcare, for example. You know, like, I think you could have a debate about it. I mean, I think it comes out in a certain way, but I think it's sort of within the world of, like, Judaism could have ideas that would make different outcomes possible. But when we're talking about immigration, right? And again, like, I'm not saying that Judaism can't also have a bunch of different positions about immigration, but I'm saying the kind of talk about immigrants, right? The kind of scapegoating and characterization of immigrants as something to be feared, and the characterization of entire groups of people as rapists and criminals and the implication that they are, that is something that simply, to me, seems outside the bounds of something that Judaism can possibly tolerate. Number two, for me, is what I call the immorality, right? The idea that we can have, a president, you know, who has been on the record of talking about women in the most disgusting ways, you know, about how they should be treated and how what you can do to other people when you're a star, whether that's talk or whether that's something that he actually did, it simply, to me, crosses the line of moral behavior in such a way that it feels to me like Judaism cannot do anything other than condemn that and say a person like that cannot be our president. And if it doesn't, then I'm not that interested in it. You know, the third to me is what I'm calling the amorality, right? Which is basically the idea that, you know, Trump has said very explicitly, essentially, that you can say anything you want in the campaign. You know, when he talked about locking up Hillary Clinton, and then afterwards, I think he was interviewed about, well, you know, are you going to lock her up? And he said, you know, no, I don't want to do that. You know, and they said something like, well, then do you feel like it was wrong to have said it throughout the campaign if you weren't really going to do it? And his answer was something along the lines of, well, I won. You know, meaning the implication of that being you can say literally anything you want as long as you get the outcome that you want. That's what I'm calling the amorality. And I don't think that amorality is compatible with Judaism. I think if nothing else, Judaism stands for a moral system. Now, we can debate about what that moral system should be, but the idea that you can have that kind of notion about morality, that it just doesn't matter as long as you get what you want, I don't think that that is consistent with any form of Judaism that I think I would want to be a part of. And then the final piece is what you were talking about earlier. You know, it's essentially this threat to democracy, right? This idea that of the lying, right? The idea of the lying about the crowd sizes at the inauguration. It's a small example. There's obviously so many more important things to be concerned about lying about. But what's remarkable about that example is that it's actually provable by photographic evidence. And that degree of lying and that degree of just complete and total misrepresentation of facts and the talk about alternative facts, I mean, that is a existential threat to our democracy. And I think that the existential threat to our democracy is intolerable Jewishly on two levels, right? One is that Judaism in America has been particularly and uniquely successful because of the richness of American democracy. And Judaism can't tolerate a person coming into a system and abusing all of its institutions such that it essentially undermines the system. And it just feels to me like, if nothing else, right, the entire prophetic tradition of Judaism was about the prophets coming to the king of Israel, and saying, you are in violation of everything that we stand for. God will take away your kingship. You can't say that Judaism doesn't have a tradition of looking at power and saying it is in violation of what Judaism stands for. If it's not possible today to be in a Jewish world that emphatically states that Donald Trump and his administration and the way that he is conducting business as the president of this country is not Jewishly possible to endorse, then again, I am in the business of trying to reform Judaism, right? And so for me, it's not that I want to leave Judaism. It's that all the more so, I want to be part of bringing about a new set of Jewish institutions that will be able to say emphatically that this is a violation.
Yeah, so I want to bring to light something. So this, I think, crystallized something for me, because there's a few things you said that I actually don't agree with. And I want to bring them up, not because I think we should, you know, hash it all out. Like, I think there are two different ways of approaching this. I actually don't think that Judaism is fundamentally or secondarily a moral system. And more than that, I do think 100% that it is Jewishly possible to support Trump. I 100% unequivocally think that. I don't say that as something I like or something that, but I, to me, that's like asking, is it possible for America to tolerate Trump? Of course it is. We just voted for him. I don't think it is true to American value. I don't think that the things we have prescribed America as standing for, equality, liberty, you know, all of these things, I don't think that those jive with what Donald Trump stands for and all of the horrors that we are seeing. But clearly it is, to use a fake word, Americanly possible to tolerate Donald Trump. And I would say this, like, to me, so you used some language things that I want to highlight. At some points you talked about what Judaism is or is not. And at other points you talked about what Judaism has. And to like Judaism has the prophetic tradition of speaking out for justice, et cetera. For me, that's how I approach it. And I don't, like if I'm going to be real, and maybe this will sound radical or scary to, like, I don't think I have Jewish beliefs. I don't look, like, in terms of the job that Judaism does for me, to use some of our past language, I actually don't look to Judaism to give me beliefs. I have beliefs sometimes that are affected by my Jewishness and Judaism, and sometimes that are deepened by connection to particular texts and et cetera. But for me, what Judaism is able to do, and what, especially in moments like this, is it is in effect a library of resources for people like you and me to use and employ to vigorously back up the moral values that we come to external from Judaism and in connection to Judaism. As much as the majority of Jews didn't vote for Trump, 20%+ did. And it is possible for somebody to come to that conclusion. And I think to do so authentically and Jewishly. And maybe we think, maybe we're different on that. I'm not sure.
I think we definitely are. It sounds like we definitely are different on that.
I've had that as part of my foundation for a long time, that, like, look, this Judaism piece that is so important to me is not important because it stands for the values that I love and cherish. It is important because it gives me the ability to harness my values and employ them in a way that makes the that makes my personal ability to influence the world better. I think that Judaism has richness and stories and ideas and historical memories that I need to be my best activist and my best self. So that's where I'm coming in from. And it bothers me deeply that there are people in sort of the Jewish system or world that are using Judaism to do the exact opposite thing. But to me, that doesn't bring up the question of whether Judaism is valuable at all, because it still can, ultimately, I think more people come to my conclusion than come to the reactionary Trumpist conclusion. But for me, the question of, is Judaism worthwhile at all right now, is, are we seeing in actuality that ability that I cherish of Judaism providing like a value added to activism and values in our world? Are we seeing that happen? And if not, if it's not doing that, and maybe it's being used for other purposes, that's where I ask, you know, is it valuable at all? It's not like, does it stand for my values? It's, is it able to be utilized in a way that pushes forth values I care about?
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. Like, and I think it's kind of fascinating that, you know, a year later, we find a strong place of disagreement between us, because I get the image that you're painting. I mean, the way that I'm envisioning what you just said is, and you use the word library, and I'm envisioning like a literal library where, you know, people can go in and there's lots of different books there. And the question is, are the people who, you know, kind of are in the, you know, anti-Trump activist world, you know, if they go into that library, do they look around and find nothing of interest and then leave without a book? Or are they able to like find a shelf and they're like, oh, wow, there's really so many great books here. You know, I am so interested, and these books are really useful. Now I'm going to bring these back out to my world, and I'll be better in that world because of it. But what I want is something different from Judaism, and I think, by the way, from America too. You know, I question, I'm not sure exactly how to characterize it, but like I kind of have some question whether it's Americanly possible to support Donald Trump. And my feeling is that if the value system becomes so dilute that it's able to really stand for anything, right? I mean, that you could go into the library and you could find any support for anything in there. Then I say, you know what? I think it's time to build a new library. I want to define a certain set of red lines where it's no longer part of that library. And by the way, like, I think we're very comfortable. Look, I mean, you know, most Jews are pretty comfortable saying, you know, look, Jesus, that's not part of Judaism. You know, so it's like we have our lines for where the library ends. You know, not everybody agrees with that, right? But you know, I think the majority of Jews, the vast majority of Jews sort of, you know, agrees like, Jesus, you know, that's not part of Judaism. Or, you know, and what I'm trying to say is that Donald Trump, that's not part of Judaism.
Yeah. So this is really important. And I love that we sort of finally reached this realization between the two of us. We're always operating in pretty big picture conversations, but this gets to like really big picture. Like, what does it mean to be part of, whether it's Judaism or a religion? Like, what, this gets to the basic jobs of what Judaism is meant to do, to use the Christensen language that we often use. And yeah, I think that we're coming at it from different places. Where we are totally aligned is that the Jewish world as we know it is both doing something unconscionable and likely to become more irrelevant to American Jews if it does not find a way to make itself grounded on the principles that you and I share. Because for me, it's immaterial whether Judaism as an ideology, well, it's not immaterial, but it's not the most important thing, whether Judaism as an ism can sort of fit in particular horrible ideas that Donald Trump stands for. But what is entirely relevant is, are the Jewish institutions, A, that claim to represent me, and B, who don't claim to represent me, but would like me to connect with them in some way, are those institutions going to stand for any sort of moral values? And what I see right now is, you know, maybe.
it's really interesting to me to sort of think about this. I mean, I guess I'm curious, like, whether you have any red lines, like, right, whether there is anything that somebody could claim to be doing from a Jewish point of view that you would say that just can't be.
Basically, no. I mean, you brought up Jesus before. I mean, without going all the way into that issue, I would point to the fact, A, that I know of people who see Jesus as a messianic figure who also affiliate very strongly in the Jewish world, and I don't see that as, I would find that to be totally inconsistent with an idea that Judaism is not fundamentally about beliefs, which is what I'm claiming. Like, I hear a lot of people talk about how Judaism is about practice and action and not belief, but then they say, oh, but nobody can believe in Jesus. And that doesn't make sense to me. So I, without going into all of that, like, I wouldn't draw almost any lines about particular, I think that you can be Jewish and not believe in God, as we've spoken about. And I think that's more radical than being Jewish and saying you see Jesus as a Messiah kind of figure. Ultimately, I don't think that the idea of somebody doing any one particular thing, whether it's an action or a belief, would make them not Jewish.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting because anything that I'm going to define as part of my identity, I want to have a sense that it is not just a resource of stuff, but that it's actually a system, or that it has, you know, characteristics of a system that help guide me in the choice of my values, in the expression of my values, in the habits that will allow me to live out my values, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I'm looking for in Judaism. And look, I mean, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm advocating, right, a Judaism that at the very least is God optional. And that's radical, right? I'm not making a claim that the kind of Judaism that I'm looking for is the kind of Judaism that has existed for the past 2,000 years. And I think that there are going to be people who strongly believe that Judaism can only be a religion, can only be something that is dictated by God, right? And those people would probably not want to affiliate with the Judaism that I want to see come about. You know, look, I'm not saying that a Jew as defined today cannot support Donald Trump. Like you say, I mean, like, that's belied by the facts. A lot of Jews do support Donald Trump. What I'm saying is that raises the question for me, has Judaism as it is sort of come to its natural end, you know, such that the fact that 20-whatever% of Jews could support Donald Trump is all the more sign to me that Judaism needs to change.
Yeah, and I ultimately would just, either to you or to listeners, I would really ask, okay, are there other ways that Judaism could be valuable other than grounding particular beliefs? My answer is an unequivocal yes, and I feel comfortable saying that because I, every day, enter into the process of really asking that question deeply. And the way I ask it is by treating my own Judaism in the same way that I would treat another tradition. You know, if I go online and I'm researching about Buddhist practices or Hindu practices or Taoist beliefs or whatever it might be, I decide whether to incorporate elements of those other religions into my own life. Maybe not, you know, stealing practices, but if ideas are particularly resonant, I decide whether to do that based on the merit of those ideas. And I try to do that with Judaism. I at least strive to make my reasoning behind doing Jewish practices really be because they are meaningful and help me be a better human being and sort of act better in the world, and not simply because I inherit them. And I think that part of why I do that is because I treat Judaism not as a foundational good based on moral groundings, but because I actually sort of treat myself in my head as a bit external to it sometimes. And I subject the practices and ideas of Judaism to the same kind of scrutiny that I would subject other things to. And I guess to me, that doesn't send a message that Judaism is valueless. It actually says, oh, Judaism has to, like, earn its role. Judaism has to be strong. And for all the reasons we've talked about, you know, this marketplace of ideas, et cetera, like Judaism's actual teachings and stories have to be strong enough to stand up against all of the all of the stuff I look into in Buddhism or Hinduism or Christianity or whatever. And that's okay. Maybe you're right that this points to like a less of an affiliation kind of thing in the future. I think the why be Jewish as opposed to why do things from Judaism are two different questions. And it maybe it's just that it doesn't – if in 500 years there is no Judaism in the sense we think of, but there are tons of people that like are engaging with Judaism stuff in alongside other things, I would actually be totally thrilled with that.
Well – so, I mean, I guess I would say two things. Well, like, so two things. One is that I guess, like, my question, first of all, I definitely have a question for our listeners as to, like, which of these visions sort of it fits more with what you're looking for, you know? I'm really curious. I'm curious if it's a generational thing. I'm curious if what are other factors that sort of lead to this sort of different point of view? Is it just a personality difference, right? I like, my question to you about the way that you've characterized it is, like, if that's the way that you look at it, then what makes you say, you know, I am Jewish, I am a Jew? Is that just a holdover from the way that people have talked before? That's the question, because it makes me feel like, for me to say I am Jewish, like, again, I generally reject the idea that what it means for me is a tribal thing, right? When I say I am Jewish, I don't mean that I'm part of some group that happens to be related, right? I am Jewish to mean when I say it is that, you know, I am part of a group that has formed around a certain set of ideas and a certain, you know, whether those ideas or values or practices or whatever, you know, that it's sort of a chosen community for me. I mean, like, for me, the big change, you know, in the ancient sense and the modern sense for me of what it means to say I am Jewish is this whole, like, we're all Jews by choice now idea, right? I embrace the idea that we're Jews by choice. So I want to have that statement mean that I am affiliated with a group of people who have also chosen Judaism. And the reason why we've chosen it is because there was something in it that made it choosable. And, like, if you ask me, like, at a future time, if there's no such thing as, like, Judaism, but there's, you know, a lot of people doing various Jewish practices, like, I guess I would say that doesn't sound great to me. Like, it's not because it's not valuable, but because I feel like it's a missed opportunity, right? Like, I feel like Judaism could be a system that could do more than that. And if we got to a point in the world where it became completely modularized, but it never became systematized again, then I would say, like, there was an opportunity that was missed.
So we actually are reaching our commonality here, because my paradigm is not one. It's not just this, I'm just doing a couple things that work for me. What I would be happy with in 500 years is if people are deeply engaging with elements of Judaism that can be channeled out into the world to make their own lives better, and to use Paul Golan's language, to make their own lives better, to make their sort of localities better. I don't want to say communities, because whenever we say community, people think Jewish community. Their local worlds better, and the world entirely better. That I want people to be doing that. And if people are doing that without calling themselves Jewish, look, like, it's more exciting to me, even now, if somebody who doesn't call themselves Jewish is looking to Jewish text to deeply inspire them and affect either their moral values or their actions in the world. And I know people that do this already. I mean, Dan, you and I have spoken about my friend Chris in Philadelphia, who started the conversion process and didn't actually go through with it, but looks to the Talmud, of all things, to inform his work in the queer activist world. Like, that to me is super compelling and exciting. And it's way more exciting to me than somebody who calls themselves Jewish, is, you know, quote unquote, a member of the library, and is either not doing much with that or is using it for ends that I find abhorrent. What I would push is that I think that what you just said about how people sort of choose, we're all Jews by choice and people opt in. I think that that's really abundantly true. And I think that when people find enough in Judaism, when we make sure that Judaism is compelling enough and interesting enough and rich enough and inspiring enough that people will choose those, enough of those, I think you reach a certain point where people decide to call themselves Jewish. Like, and we know this because the opposite happens with people who are born Jews and go and call themselves Buddhists eventually. Like, we know that this happens because, you know, even though there isn't that inherited, you know, I do this because I was born that way element, there are tons of people, and not just Jews, but a lot of Jews, who have found, whether it's Buddhism or Hinduism or like other traditions that they had no kinship connection to, that were compelling enough that they chose them.
I'm kind of excited that we found a place of potential non-commonality, because I think it'll be interesting to pursue over the weeks and months and years ahead. I think that this is a good opportunity, though, to transition to sort of the next phase of this conversation, because the question is, look, the reality is that I think that that there are Jews out there that have both of our points of view and that are fundamentally going to do the same thing either way. You know, I think the two of us are two of them, which is saying that, look, here's the situation organizationally. Like, you know, I understand that the rabbi of a local synagogue may not be able to speak as strongly as I would want my organization to speak, because there's a diversity of membership in the community and people, not everybody agrees. And there are a lot of people who, you know, support Trump or whatever. So, you know, maybe the rabbi is going to be saying some things on his or her Facebook feed that they're not able to say from the Bima. And, you know, and I might say, okay, you know, I get that, I respect it, but, you know, I have things, I want to spend my weekends now protesting, I want to spend my free time, you know, calling my congressman and whatever, and the marginal time that I have available for Judaism is just not going to be dedicated to Judaism if the Jewish organizations that are available to me are not really, you know, advancing that. That's become my top priority these days. And so I think the reality that we're seeing and that we're going to see more is simply an acceleration of what we've been seeing for a long time, which is, you know, the sort of drifting away of people from Jewish organizations. And, you know, we should be understanding people who are not affiliating with Jewish organizations to be dissident, to be expressing a form of dissent and to be seen as dissidents. And I think that's all the more clear here, where if we start seeing a further drifting away from Jewish community, specifically because people are choosing to spend their time in activist type of activities against what's going on in our country, I think it's pretty hard to see that as anything other but the expression of dissent, of intra-Jewish dissent. And, you know, I think that one possibility is that you simply see all these Jews joining, you know, the Women's March, donating more to ProPublica and to Planned Parenthood and everything that sort of directly stands for their values, that people buying, you know, New York Times and Washington Post subscriptions with the money that they might otherwise have, you know, sent along to Hadassah, you know, whatever.
Well, careful, and nobody buys newspaper subscriptions, but
no, they do. They do. I mean, like, what I'm seeing is what I'm seeing on. I don't know if you're seeing this, but what I'm seeing on Facebook, for example, is a huge movement. Maybe this is a my generation thing, but a huge movement where basically people are saying that every single person should be getting a subscription, should be paying for a subscription to the New York Times and the Washington Post, because you want to fund their ability to do investigative journalism, which they're only going to be able to do if you buy a subscription.
Okay,
so it's almost that people are starting to see the New York Times and the Washington Post as a charity that they should be donating to. Really, that seems to be the attitude that I'm seeing among the people that I have on my Facebook feed. And so I think that, and by the way, you know, in terms of where the New York Times and the Washington Post are not 501c3s. So these quote donations, right, the getting the subscription are actually not tax deductible. But nevertheless, there's this like strong movement to say, you know, we should donate to them. But if again, whether or not people want Judaism to primarily be a source of values, you know, if they're not seeing Judaism as advancing their values, but they are seeing the New York Times as advancing their values, you know, they're going to shift their marginal dollars to the New York Times. So on the one hand, that's a crisis for existing Jewish organizations that find themselves in this double bind. But on the other hand, it's an opportunity, right, for sure, for organizations like Bend the Ark that are already profoundly and deeply committed to this kind of activism, you know, but it also it would seem to open up a lot of room for new Jewish organizations to get started. Or we've seen the organization If Not Now, which was founded essentially as an organization focused on stopping the American Jewish community from supporting the occupation by Israel of the territories, that organization, it's not that they've given up on that mission, but that they've added to their mission this sort of leading the resistance of, you know, at least the young Jewish community to the Trump administration. And they've been having a lot of success, and I think a lot of growth, and certainly a lot of attention from having taken on that mission as central to their mission.
This is what's happening. What you just laid out is 100%. And I want to very consciously use past and present tense in addition to future tense. We often talk about like organizations may risk losing things in the future. Like already, we are seeing people allocate time that they would spend on, you know, certain kinds of Judaism that are now going towards protests. And we know this, by the way, so both because of what you just laid out and what day was the Women's March on? It was on a Saturday. It was on a Saturday. Right. I would venture a guess that there were more Jews, or at least very close to as many Jews, at a protest in the streets as there were in any synagogue, like combined the synagogues around the country. We know there were 3 million attendees total. If, I mean, we could lowball it and say that 2% of those 3 million are Jewish. It's probably more given what we know about Jewish presence and activism generally. But even if it's 2% of 3 million, we're in the tens of thousands at that point.
Yeah, and I would even take it one step further and to say that, again, at least based on what I've seen from people saying about that experience, it was the most religious experience that they had all year.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Like in a non-trivial way, you know, praying with your feet. I mean, people might see that as sort of a cute phrase. Like people really saw this as a religious obligation, as a religious commitment. And as somebody who I wasn't able to go to a march because I was in an area that I happened to be in an area that day that didn't have one. But I felt my loss as a Jew was I feel so sad. I wasn't so sad. I was happy to support friends of mine. But like, I'm a little bummed that I'm not out there living my values in the streets. I wasn't bemoaning the fact that I didn't go to Saturday morning services that day. That's not what I like. And so it's not hypothetical. It's already happening. And once again, 2% of 3 million is 60,000. And that's if we are being almost definitely on the low end. If we say that 5 to 10% were Jewish that attended these protests, which I think is pretty reasonable given the areas where the biggest protests were, we're in the hundreds of thousands. So that is worth noting. That is a big deal. And I agree with you, there's gonna be Jewish organizations or projects that pop up. I think If Not Now is really important to mention. Like Cards on the Table, I've done some work with If Not Now, but the growth has been astonishing. This has existed in any form since the summer of 2014. This is a 2.5-year-old organization, and we're talking about thousands of people around the country regularly attending the protest. I mean, hundreds have been trained by If Not Now, and thousands have attended events. I mean, this is very quick. And what I saw is I'm in Providence, Rhode Island, and I go to local Jewish events here. We're usually looking at, you know, a couple dozen people. For a bigger service, there's more. But we planned a Jewish resistance action through If Not Now to Trump on a Thursday in the rain, and we got 75 people with like a couple days notice on a Facebook event and no advertising. This is clearly relevant from a Jewish lens for people. And it's not past, it's not future tense. It's not about what will happen. It already is.
Yeah. One of the things that I was thinking about, at the Women's March was that, like, what's the next thing that's going to happen? You know, like, and it's interesting when you think about that in kind of Jewish terms, because one of the sort of technologies, right, that we have from Judaism that we, you know, from is the idea of the weekly gathering, right? And, it seems like there's a lot of Jews who, you know, don't want to come to synagogue every Saturday, but I bet that, you know, there would be a lot more openness to doing some kind of protest every Saturday, right? You know, if it could be framed in Jewish terms, right? Like, this is our Shabbat observance. And it's fascinating to me to sort of imagine, I mean, thinking in terms of like what we're talking about all the time about sort of disruptive innovation, right? It seems unlikely to me that too many existing synagogues are going to say, hey, from that, you know, for the next 4 years, instead of having services in our synagogue building, we are going to have services in front of Trump Tower every Shabbat, and we're going to, you know, sing songs of protest, and we're also going to pray, and we're also going to read the Torah and whatever, but we're going to, you know, do it in the spirit of protest, right? But it's actually pretty easy for me to imagine that some group of, you know, 10 people is going to have that idea at some point, you know, and since they're not an existing synagogue, they might not say as many prayers. Maybe they won't say any prayers. Maybe, you know, they might do things very differently, but that they would kind of establish it as a Shabbat practice. And I am pretty sure that if 10 people started a Shabbat practice of every week gathering in front of the Trump Tower in their city and having some kind of protest service, that the next week there would be 20 people and the next week there would be, you know, 40 people, if not even a faster growth. And that's just an example. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like reflecting on the experience that so many Jews are having around the advent of the Trump administration, it's important in its own right, right? But it also brings into relief so much of what we've been talking about over the last year on this show, right? That people do have passionate beliefs and values. People are looking to express those values. When they have opportunities to express those values, they take them. And that the right kind of Jewish organizer who was able to present the Jewish values and practices in such a way that they actually showed those Jews not only that their values were affirmed, but also gave them a deeply rooted grounding, a deeply rooted sense in where those values actually have emerged from historically, and then allows them to live out those values in very practical ways. Like, right, like people are looking for practical ways. People, at least in my generation, are wanting to subscribe to the New York Times and to the Washington Post. And that's just an example. So I think that if there were Jewish practices that were presented in that way and that were specifically built around what the most pressing concerns that people have today and that I think will have over the next 4 years, which is, you know, how can I stop the country from going in a direction that I desperately am afraid of? That would be an extremely powerful organizing principle for a new way of organizing Jewish life. I'm looking forward to, I think we're going to have a chance to continue this conversation about the deep meaning of being Jewish, the jobs to be done of Judaism, and, you know, other practical matters such as, you know, how should Jewish life be organized, you know, under what kind of corporate form or nonprofit status and all of that, definitely in the year ahead. But I actually think our next segment of episodes is really going to lend itself to more of this thinking, although it's not focused on the Trump administration. We're really excited that over the next few weeks, we're going to be having interviews with Douglas Rushkoff, who wrote a book called Nothing Sacred about Judaism. And then we're going to be talking to Erwin Kula, the president of Klal, an organization, a think tank that focuses on Jewish leadership and the Jewish future. And I'm really looking forward to listening to those. And by the way, that's going to be the end of our first year.
Yeah, it's going to be great. To close out the episode, as always, I just want to encourage all of you out there listening to be in touch with us. And there's a few ways for you to do that. First, you can head to our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. Give us a like there and follow all the different things that we post about. And you can head to our website, judaismunbound.com. And last but not least, you can send us emails at dan@nextjewishfuture.org and lex@nextjewishfuture.org. And the other plug that we try to make is that we really do appreciate whatever support you can give to us monetarily. And the way for you to do that is through www.judaismunbound.com/donate. And as Dan mentioned at the top of the episode, really whatever amount you are able to do, whether it's a monthly donation or a one-time donation, is greatly appreciated. So thanks so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.